Welcome to the Sacred Womb Podcast, womb-centered wisdom for the arc of womanhood, with me, your host, Melanie Swan. Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Sacred Womb Podcast. How are you doing today? How is the new podcast landing with you? I hope you're enjoying that new intro jingle. I had lots of fun choosing that. So I think it helps warm us up. I think it's fun. I think it's inspiring. So I actually listened to it before I start this podcast so that, you know, gets me in the zone. So what have we got today? We have Britt Frank on sharing our story with structure and safety. So Britt is based in Kansas in the States, and she's certified in somatic experiencing and is a level one internal family systems trained. So Britt's often featured actually as a mental health expert for podcasts in print and broadcast media. And Britt's mission is to empower people to understand the inner workings of their minds and brains so that the change process moves from mystery to mastery. She's a teacher, speaker, and trauma therapist, and she's actually an award-winning adjunct professor at the University of Kansas. So Britt gives us loads of essential, juicy information, because as women, we join groups, we're in friendships, and this, I feel, is something that's really core to our empowerment, but is not necessarily talked about. So without further ado, here is Britt Frank with sharing our story with structure and safety. Hey, Britt, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
And thank you so much for doing this. So Britt, I've been following you on Instagram for ages, and I just love the clarity and precision of your work. And in your posts, you always put the here it is, here's what's happening, and then you put what do we do instead? What's the antidote? What is the alternative? Which I absolutely love. And so I contacted you because I saw one of your posts and was really, really drawn to the theme of it. So I really wanted to discuss that with you today. So Britt, I'm going to quote you whilst you're here so that everyone knows what we're talking about. So your post said, telling a traumatic story in chronological order can intensify the trauma that the telling of the story is supposed to help heal. And I really wanted to talk to you about the details of this, because in women's circles, sharing stories is welcome, it's promoted, and there's often space to share just whatever you want. And this can be, not always, but can be really triggering and difficult with no structure and no guidance. So can you tell us why telling a traumatic story in chronological order can intensify the trauma?
Mm-hmm. When I learned this, it was so mind-blowing. I think intuitively we know that there's a point at which telling a story doesn't work at best and re-traumatizes us at worst. I mean, I tell people all the time, if all you needed to do to heal was to tell your story, you'd feel better after telling it. And yet many of us, myself included, have noticed that we tell our trauma stories over and over and over and over again, and we don't feel any better. And it's a delicate balance, because telling a story in the presence of a safe, empathic witness is good medicine. But like we were chatting about before the recording, like any medicine, you can overdose if you take too much of it. You can do damage if you take it improperly. And sometimes it's not the right medicine for the job. So in short, telling a story from start to finish can often put our brain exactly back in that traumatic space. And rather than healing, we're actually deepening the neural groove that was formed by the trauma. And so for women's circles, because telling stories and holding space is so vital and so important, we want to do it skillfully and safely.
Okay. So you talked about intensifying the groove in the brain. Is that one of the things that happens when we're talking about our trauma story, particularly in chronological order?
It can. And this is not, I'll always preface this. This is not an always, every time for every person. If telling your story makes you feel better and lighter, great. So this message isn't necessarily for you in that moment. But often I see women and I know women and I am a woman who does this. And I tell my story over and over again and it becomes a rumination. You know, the word ruminate comes from cows chewing and we chew and we chew and we chew on the story and it doesn't go anywhere. It gets sludgy and it sort of just exists. So when I have a client that's telling me a trauma narrative, I always have them skip around. And this is something they teach in somatic experiencing or somatic or body-based psychotherapy. You skip around. So you may start at the beginning and then you jump to later in the story. And then you go back to the beginning and then you go back to the end. And a really great question for if you're holding space for someone's story is, when did you know it was over? Or when did you know you felt safe? Because what people are fascinated with is, oh my God, what happened next? And you'll never guess what happened next. And we stare at the car wreck on the side of the road and we freeze in the face of fire and chaos. What we need to actually say is, when was it over? Oh, wow, that sounds terrible. How did you know that you were safe? When did you come out of that? Who helped you out of that? And that is not a question that we are taught to ask. We're taught to go, oh my gosh, let's make it bigger and let's fan the flames of this story. Sharing a story is intended to take the flames and put them out. And by intensifying and fanning the flame, we make it worse versus asking fire hosey questions like, oh my gosh, that's amazing that you survived that. What qualities about yourself enabled you to survive that? That's a beautiful question to be able to ask someone if you're holding space for them.
Wow, I can imagine that stops the narrative just straight away and then switches the focus into, oh, something else. Wow, I've got some resources rather than being stuck in, oh my God, I was there and I still feel there.
Exactly. It actually shifts your brain activity from the reactive sort of survival, fight, flight physiology into more of our neocortex, our thinking brain. And exactly like you said, it's really amazing. So for anyone listening to this, here's your experiment. When someone's telling you anything from, you know, they had a car accident or they had a terrible travel story or whatever, ask them, wow, when did you know you felt safe? They will freeze. They will stop in their tracks. Their face will tilt and they'll go, huh? Huh? Huh. And then you'll see them actually breathe. You'll see breath go, because that kind of a question actually shifts us into more of a parasympathetic orientation. And you'll see them tilt their head. You'll see them go, huh? And then you'll see them breathe. It's wild and it works. It's crazy.
Fantastic. I'm going to put that in big, bold letters in the show notes so that we can all remember it and go try it out. Another aspect of this is, as women, our conditioning is to be polite, enabling. We want to listen to each other, which is wonderful. But you know, having these simple phrases and tools, like you've just shared with us, to enable us to stay present and be respectful and also say, no, this is not fruitful, I think can really shift our relationships dramatically.
And it helps make it not only safe, but prevent resentment, because we've all been on the receiving end of someone vomiting their story. Oh, yeah. And we want to be polite. And yet at the end of it, we feel resentful, frustrated. I saw a meme online that was, you know, I wish that conversations were like YouTube, where you can see the time bar to see how long they're going to keep talking for. So you know when it's going to be over. It feels invasive to have somebody vomit on you. Yeah. And that said, we want to be able to hold space. So when I do, when people come into my office for therapy and they're brand new, I always preface the session with, I just want to let you know right now, part of trauma healing will involve me interrupting you a lot. And that's not because I'm being rude and it's not because I devalue or minimize your experience. But if I see you going on a tangent where your brain has locked in to a narrative and you're no longer here, I am going to interrupt you. So, and people get so frustrated. They're like, no, Britt, let me tell the story. I want to tell my story. And I know you want to tell the story. I know. And we are going to get to all of it. But it's like eating. You have to chew and swallow in small bites. If I try to shove a giant piece of food down my throat, I will choke and it will be bad. So storytelling and holding space for stories needs to involve small digestible bites, which you cannot do if you're just going. without stopping. You know, it's a principle, you know, an object in motion will stay in motion unless acted upon by an outside force. So as above, so below, that's an important principle. Telling a story, just letting it go and go and go and go is not helpful, and it's not safe, nor is it useful medicinally in terms of healing.
Yeah. And then just both parties, if you're one-on-one, just end up feeling, anyway, yeah, we've all been there on both sides, I think. So anyway, I know in your post you listed one of the things that can happen when we're sharing a trauma story is that we can dissociate. Could you say a little bit more about that?
Sure. And there's a phenomenon called euphoric recall and a phenomenon called traumatic recall. And dissociation, I will also preface, is not bad. Dissociation gets such a bad rap in the mental health world. Dissociation is a tool that our brains use when there are no other options. So when we're checking out of our bodies and we're no longer present, that's not always bad. It only becomes bad when we're out of control and when we want to be present, but we're being taken out. So that's my little dissociation disclaimer. Okay. So euphoric recall is that thing that happens if I said to you, tell me about the most wonderful time in your life where everything felt right and you felt great. You're going to smile and your body's going to get all warm because your brain will actually put you back in that experience. That is euphoric recall. That's great. That's why meditation is so powerful, because we can actually induce body states based on what we're thinking about. Euphoric recall is wonderful. Except when we're recalling something that's not good, that wasn't helpful, that wasn't safe, and then we go into traumatic recall, where the same principle that allows us to feel all fuzzy and warm thinking about whatever is going to cause us to re-experience our trauma. And again, that sort of reinforces the very narrative we're trying to heal by sharing our story.
So I'll check if I've got this right. So is what you're saying is whenever we're talking about something that's happened to us, we start to re-experience the feelings associated with it. And if it's trauma, we re-experience the trauma.
Yes, unless it's being done skillfully. You can tell a story without, and that's what trauma therapy is. And that's what Women's Circle's effort to do is to hold space for a story that is in a healing way versus a re-traumatizing way.
Okay. And if I'm just blurbing it out, whether it's euphoric or traumatic, and obviously if it's traumatic, it's not at all helpful to put myself back there. I don't want to re-experience it again.
So. Yes, it's like you survived the first time. You don't have to keep reliving it. Oh, and a flashback is really that. It's when we're back in that thing and, you know, you had to do it once, but we don't actually have to keep re-experiencing over and over again. And people, you know, you can't control a flashback. Flashbacks just happen until they're healed. But you can control how you tell a story and how you hold space for someone else's story in a way that does not create trauma. Traumatic recall, which is wonderful news.
Fantastic. So just really clarifying what you're saying and checking I got it so everyone else can get it as well, because it's so juicy. So when we're telling a story, we're re-experiencing the emotions, our nervous system thinks it's happening again. And it sounds like one of our coping mechanisms is to actually dissociate whilst we're telling the story, and that keeps us from being overwhelmed again. So basically, if we're with a friend that's telling their story and they're in trauma, we can ask them, hey, when did you realize it was over? And that will help bring them out of it.
Absolutely. And again, just to go back to what you were saying, dissociation isn't bad, but we've all told our story. I mean, a lot of people can tell a trauma narrative without feeling anything. They can come into a group and share and share and share, but they're not there. They're not embodied. So their sharing is from a dissociated place, which is not helpful. So before someone shares a story with you or before you share your story with someone else, it's really helpful to set the structure. So, hey, so whenever I do groups, it's okay, we're going to hold space for each other, but I want to set the structure that we're going to interrupt with questions intended to help promote the healing aspect of the storytelling. And so that way the person doesn't feel, no one likes being interrupted. It doesn't feel good. So if you don't know that that's going to be a thing, you're just going to get pissy and go, oh my God. But if you know on the front end, this is how we structure this conversation, then they can give consent. And then when it happens, they know what's going on.
And I guess may still feel interrupted, but that's the deal and we've already agreed it.
That's right.
So that's fair enough. That's right. Okay.
And we want to interrupt. That's the whole point. It's we want to interrupt this trauma narrative. Yeah. And so the way to interrupt it is to interrupt it.
Yeah, it's to actually interrupt the loop of it.
Exactly.
Okay, then. So we've set up the deal. We're in a group or with a friend. But what about if we're the one that's looping round and we're listening to this thinking, oh, I think that might be me. I think I might tell my trauma stories in chronological order. And we've established that's not really helping. So can you talk about, is there a tool that we can use to click us back into a healthy way of relating?
So the first thing is, if this is you, no shame. If you're listening and going, oh no, I'm the oversharer, I'm the vomiter, I'm doing this to myself and to my friends, it's okay. You know, we only know what we know. And when we know more, we can do more. When we know better, we can do better. So I do not deal in shame. So really, the first step in healing anything is bringing it to conscious awareness. So if you're all of a sudden getting hit with, this is me, congratulations, that's great. Now you know. So now that we know it's a thing and it's in the light, we can do something about it. So that's step one. So once you recognize that you are an oversharer, then when you're going into a circle or a one-on-one or whatever, let the person know, hey, just so you know, I'm an oversharer, so feel free to interrupt me. And that's wonderful, because now not only are you being interrupted, but you are actually instigating this as a healing tool, which is going to feel empowering. It's, I want you to hold space for the story, and I'm going to request that you interrupt me if you see me spiraling. Now, you may not have the most skillful listener, so they might not know how to do that, but you can certainly make that request. And if they know this is how to best support you, people want to know, how do you want me to hold space for you is a wonderful question. You know, I'm a therapist, but I'm also just a person. So when my friends share with me, they don't necessarily want a clinical answer. So I always start with, how would you like me to hold space for what you're sharing? Do you want my like therapist-y answer? Do you want my like witchy-woo answer? Do you want my, I'm just, you know, listening to you because like, what do you need from this share? And then that's wonderful to know how to express our needs. And then as the friend, how to support efficiently and effectively.
I love that you do that. I do that too. Like, do you want the therapist? Do you want the witch? Or do you want me to just shut up and listen because I need to know?
Exactly. Because otherwise, how are we going to know, right?
Yeah, totally. Totally. Because sometimes we do just need to talk to a friend. We just need to say, oh, God, blimey, blah, 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 blah. But if we know the deal and we've set a nice safe space up, then we can go for it.
Yes. And I actually have, this is true in 12-step recovery circles in meetings that are run well. And I have clients that are really good at this too. Once they know this principle is, if you do need to vomit and you need to unload, which is valid, sometimes that's good medicine. Number one, set a timeline and a time limit. So I'll have clients say, okay, I need to rant, but please set your timer for 7 minutes. So once that time is up, it's up, and I'm not just going off into the ether. That's a wonderful tool. So if I have friends that want to vomit, let's set a time limit on your vomiting so it's fruitful, intentional, and productive.
Ah, oh, fantastic. What an awesome tool.
And time limits make people feel safe. So I know for me, the reason I don't join a lot of groups or women's sacred circles is because I feel profoundly unsafe when there's just this unstructured sharing vomit. It feels so gross to me, and it feels so icky and so like, ugh, I have a visceral reaction to it. If you tell me that we're going to come in and the structure is no one gets to share for more than 10 minutes and we are going to keep that as a sacred trust, a sacred contract, I'm in. Sign me up.
Yep. I'm with you there. That's why I don't join many of them either, because I don't want to sit there. I don't want to feel hijacked. I don't want to just walk out either. So yeah, totally understand what you're saying.
Right. And if you're dissociated, you're not connecting. So if the point of sharing a story is to connect, you have to be embodied in order to be able to connect. And going off on a story tangent doesn't do that, doesn't allow physiologically for that to happen. That's why those little bite-sized pieces are so crucial.
And I love that 10-minute time limit as well. If you've got 10 minutes to share, if I go to a circle, I've got 10 minutes, that focuses the brain. I think I've got 10 minutes. So what is really important now, rather than just sort of meandering around? So yeah, wonderful. Time limits. So could you explain and expand on why, if we are in circle and we are listening to a trauma story, why sometimes it might actually trigger our own trauma if we're listening?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I like you, I'm always a, what do we do about it? And so we're not sitting in the problem. Before, if you're thinking of joining a group, the best question to ask the group leader is, what's the structure of the group? And if they don't have an answer, move on. And if they have an answer, then you can ask yourself, is this something that I can be on board with? So that's my preface. Now, to answer your question, if someone is sharing a story that is your story, if someone is sharing about surviving a childhood, whatever, and you survived the same childhood, whatever, your entire body is going to respond with that traumatic recall because they're sharing your story. And so because of the whole, you know, resonance thing and mirror neurons and just the capacity for connection that we have as empathic humans, you're going to go back there too. And as a, you know, as therapists and healers and practitioners, that's a thing that I know you and I, we have to learn how to hold space without going into that, because a lot of our clients share our very trauma stories. Not that it's the same experience. You and I could experience the same event differently. But if you had a thing happen to you that I had happen to me, it's important that we are not going down the rabbit hole together.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, great. Is that what you'd call secondary trauma?
Yes. Okay. Now, again, I guess if a group facilitator is holding space for a participant and then there's a witness, I guess the witness would be more of a tertiary trauma. So primary, secondary, tertiary, either way, if you're in the presence of trauma or someone sharing a trauma, there's the ability for you to also be traumatized.
Which I guess is pretty likely with women coming together in a group to connect and heal. But what I'm hearing you say is, if we've got the structure, if we've got a safe space, a setup, and then we've got an order to this.
And being aware of our shadows. So if someone is sharing and they're receiving compassion, attention, and empathy, and you did not receive that as a child, all of your shadow stuff's going to come up and you're going to get really angry and frustrated and you're going to hate her and this group stinks and I don't like this person and this, they don't know what they're doing and da, 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 and that's okay. But it's important to know that. And as facilitators, healers, and practitioners, to let people know that's a thing. And heads up, this could happen. And here's what it's called. It's called projection. And this is called shadow content. And you're not crazy. And here's how we work with it safely.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so much to run in a group, isn't there? And being in a group, it's just all experiences, all encompassing experiences in there. So yeah, so really important. We have an awareness of this, how to choose a group, how to be in a group in a way that's actually healing. Oh, I'm really enjoying this conversation, Britt. I could talk to you for hours, but we will time limit this because it's been, you know, it's been so packed and you've given such great information. So I think we can wrap this up now.
Mm-hmm. And these are all just points for deeper exploration. None of this is meant to be a deep dive. This is just, let's put pins on the map so you know places that you have the ability to go if it's relevant for you.
Yep. Fantastic, Britt. Thank you. So I do want to share your website so people can find you. And very importantly, what is your Instagram account? What's your Instagram handle so that people can follow you for more nuggets of wisdom?
Thank you. Oh, I appreciate that. My handle is @BrittFrank and it's BrittFrank. And then my website is www.thegreenhousekc.com. So the word the and then greenhouse, then kc.com.
Oh, what's that stand for? The Greenhouse KC bit.
KC is Kansas City, which is where I live. And the greenhouse is what I have named my practice, because a greenhouse is a structured environment where every condition is maintained for growth and repair of plants. And the therapy is pretty much the same thing. It's, let's turn the heat up in this room and create conditions for growth, repair, and change.
Oh, wow. I love your approach. Fantastic. So do you work one-to-one? Do you work with groups? What's lighting your fire right now, Britt?
You know, it's so funny because group work really is my heart and my passion, and I've moved away from it in the last few years. So right now my practice focuses just on one-on-one. I don't do couples. I don't work. I know my skill set. I stay in my lane. I don't do well with couples. There's too many nervous systems in their room, too many inner children running around. It doesn't work. So right now I do one-on-one, but I'm because of my licensure, I can't practice outside the states of Kansas or Missouri. So I'm looking to move into groups where I have a little bit more freedom and flexibility to bring in people from all around the world. I love group work. I think it is so powerful and so beautiful when it's done safely.
Ah, isn't it? And so, so powerful. You've got the amplified field of the group and just, wow, yeah, huge potential there. Wow, wow, and wow. Thank you, Britt. Thank you so much for that. Thank you so much for your work and for your Instagram and for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much.